How are you doing? Everything?
How am I doing?
Yeah, I think so. I hope you're keeping safe. I know things are not easy right now.
Yeah. You know, 3 months, the third month of war teaches you a lot. You get used to many things. I do not wake up to air raid sirens anymore. And just today, there were like, I think, three during the night. But what one cannot get used to is to the death and suffering of the people. This is something that breaks my heart every day. I even got used to seeing enormous destruction inflicted by Russia on Ukrainian soil and on Ukrainian infrastructure. But getting used to people's death, blood, sufferings, pain, it's impossible.
Yeah, I'm certain it must be one of the hardest things you've gone through in your position, or if not the hardest thing you've gone through in your position, I'm certain. But
for sure. In my life, not only in my position. I saw, of course, I saw people dying before on Maidan in Ukraine in 2014. My life was at risk at that time, but it's uncomparable to what is happening now.
Okay, and we're going to talk more about that, obviously, but welcome, of course. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us at Capital FM as well. I think, you know, there are some talking points here, and I know we're going to deviate a little bit here and there because of, obviously, the situation on the ground, but first and foremost, you know, maybe talk a little bit about the relationship between Kenya and the Ukraine. I think pre-war, pre-invasion, obviously there is a presence here in Kenya. We had your ambassador in studio with us a few weeks ago as well. I'd just like to understand the relationship between Kenya and the Ukraine.
Ukraine and Kenya traditionally enjoyed good relations. We always had strong embassy in Kenya, and that covered not only our bilateral relations but also the UN presence in Kenya. And students from Kenya studied in Ukrainian universities, so not a single cloud was on the skies of Ukrainian-Kenyan relations. And in principle, Ukraine traditionally developed very balanced and respectful relations with all African countries, because unlike some other nations, we have old imperialistic traditions of diplomacy. We were always good friends, and we treat all African countries as equals with full respect. So the war did not destroy this relationship. We do not see anything that Kenya would be doing against Ukrainian interests or in a disrespectful way towards Ukraine, and we very much appreciate it.
Okay, great. Now, obviously, with the invasion happening in the Ukraine, you know, we see it every day in the news, we're reading about it, you know, on social media, but there's also been a side of Ukraine that has really encouraged the rest of the world, and this is the togetherness of the country for a single purpose. I think this is a wonderful thing that we see. If you read between the lines of war, you see a country that is completely, completely together with a patriotism I don't think we've seen in different parts of the world. Is this a surprising thing for you?
No, because I'm Ukrainian and I know history of my country very well. But, you know, I think, and we were always great fighters when it came to defending our freedom and our values. But I think that people in Africa should understand Ukrainians better than in other places of the world, for a very simple reason. Because, you know, we always evolved in the shadow of the big neighbor, big global power called Russia. in the same way as Africa had evolved in the shadow of big empires who overwhelmed, who established control, who took the best from you without allowing you to actually, flourish your identity and show what you are capable of. That's very much in common. This is something very much in common between us. So the moment when we came out from the shadow and showed who we are, of course, the entire world is like, wow, these Ukrainians are cool. The question is, why you were not willing to see us and consider us at our own merits before the war? In a very simple way, as people are now opening Africa for themselves and getting like excited about it. But why didn't it happen decades ago? So I hope you understand what I mean. This is the sense of being underappreciated.
Sure.
And then everyone gets surprised with you, like, wow, you're so cool. Mm-hmm. Yes, we were always cool. You were not willing to see that.
Sure. And it's a shame that it takes something this drastic for us to see it, really. I mean, that's actually the sad part of it. You've had a lot to, you spoke about it a moment ago as well, the relationship with Africa, Kenya specifically, but also across the continent. So many students from across Africa were studying in the Ukraine. Another big surprise for many of us who were seeing this for the first time. I mean, this is really an incredible thing that you've opened your country to the entire world. And again, something else we're only seeing now.
Yes, in the first days of the war, one of the top priorities for my ministry was to assist foreign nationals with evacuation from Ukraine. And there were countries, I will not name them, but there were African countries who had abandoned their students. And we were the only ones, we as the foreign ministry, we were the only ones helping them and guiding them to find, to reach the border, the western border with Ukraine, and to get evacuated. But the list of these countries is very, very limited. I will not name them. I understand their difficulties. They did not have the capacity to help. So we as the government to help their nationals. So we as the government of Ukraine help them. But with the rest of African nations, we worked very closely and in a very coordinated way to help students out, leave the country in a safe way. And I assure you that the first weeks of the war, the border between Ukraine and Western countries was not the best place to be. Because there were so many people, there was a lot of chaos. It was very difficult to get through. And there were some difficulties with all of this, but we helped foreign students to leave safely. Also directly from the war zone, because, for example, the city of Kharkiv in eastern Ukraine is a very famous place to study, and many African students had studied there, and we helped them to leave. But my point, on a positive note, I would like to say that all African students are welcome to come back. They were always an integral part of our society. And we were happy to give them a chance to receive necessary education, to choose their path in life. And they are always welcome back.
That's wonderful. And, you know, obviously, speaking closer to home, there were Kenyan students there. And I know that you worked quite closely with the government of Kenya to ensure the safe return of a number of Kenyan students as well to return home safely here, which is wonderful as well. The impact of the war, another surprise to many of us. And again, I guess this goes back to us not really willing to learn about other places. We didn't realize that we relied on the Ukraine so much for food security and certain agricultural goods. this is something that is quite surprising to us, and it has had a negative impact, the war, of course, on the on food security for the world and for African countries in particular, which was a surprise to many of us as well.
Again, we are coming back to the question that we already discussed, that Ukrainians and Africans have the same feeling of being underappreciated. So when the crisis comes, it becomes all of a sudden apparent why we are important. It's true that Ukraine is one of the countries in the world who are feeding the world, literally. And now we are facing extreme difficulties with exporting our agricultural products to world markets, including Africa. And the only reason why Ukrainian grains, corn, sunflower oil, and other products are not making it to the markets of Africa is the Russian blockade of Ukrainian ports in the Black Sea. Whatever you hear from Russian propaganda, I give you my word, and I speak with utmost honesty and sincerity. The only reason for the upcoming food shortage and even famine in some countries is the Russian blockade of Ukrainian ports. We, together with some European nations and the United Nations, built routes, alternative routes of supplies to the Baltic ports, to the ports in the Baltic Sea, and to the Romanian ports in the Black Sea. But they are bottleneck. They cannot. They are not big enough to accommodate the all necessary volumes of agricultural products. So now we are working hard with again the United Nations and other countries to unblock our ports, to convince Russia to unblock our ports, to establish safe passages, and to allow commercial vessels to take all of the grain to the global market. Once this is done, there will be no food shortage, prices will not be hiking, and things will get back to normal. But to get there, we need Russia to change its position.
Is there a dialogue that's happening between your office and Russia in regard to this?
We are speaking through the United Nations. We believe that this situation is of such complexity that it's impossible to resolve it at the bilateral level. The problem is that no one can trust Russia. This is the issue. Even if you make a bilateral deal with them, they are highly likely to break it unilaterally. So we need a third player with sufficient authority and influence who can help us implement this who can help us to achieve this goal.
And maybe just as we wind up, we have a big event happening in August here in Kenya, our elections. You know, just wanted to get, you know, from where you sit, obviously elections in all countries are relevant to your office. You know, what are your thoughts? What are your feelings about our upcoming elections? It's always a time of anxiety and uncertainty here in Kenya. You know, we every 5 years, we kind of go through the same cycle. Just get your thoughts on our upcoming elections.
You tell me about elections and anxiety associated with them. Ukraine's democracy is so vibrant that every round of elections in this country is emotionally is like a mixture of the most popular talk show and political struggle. Even grandmothers participate in discussions, sitting on the benches near their houses. So I think we should be happy that both Ukraine and Kenya are vibrant democracies. I think these democracies make us stronger, and this is what makes us different from undemocratic country. Look at Russia. You know, formerly they also have elections. But everyone can tell you the outcome of elections much ahead of the voting day.
Yeah.
So this is our choice. And this is why I think people of Kenya could also understand Ukrainians better, because we are fighting for freedom and for the right to choose. We don't need an emperor. We've had enough of emperors in our lives, as much as you did. And we don't need a Russian emperor who will be deciding on what we have to do and how we should develop. We are masters of our own destiny, and we have democratic elections to get through it. And we Ukrainians will always welcome the choice made by the people in fair elections. But emotionally, I totally understand you. I'm on your side. Sometimes I get myself. I get tired of endless election marathons that we have to run. But the beauty of elections is that you have freedom to choose, and as long as you have freedom to choose, you influence the future of your own, but also the future of your country.
All right. Listen, thank you so much for taking the time to speak to us. I hope you manage to stay safe. And, you know, anytime that you want to come back on our show, we're more than happy to have you as a guest. I know things aren't easy, but I really appreciate you taking the time out to speak to us today.
Thank you. And to wrap up, I would like to also congratulate you with Africa Day. And I will be very much looking forward to visiting Kenya. I have political reasons to do that, but also a private one. I'm a big fan of elephants, and I want to come to Kenya to see my first elephant alive.
Well, we will take you when you get here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.